On the other hand, if Maris looked angry, the Inquisitor looked positively demented. She whirled around as the library door opened, her mouth twisted into an ugly shape. "What are you two doing here?" she shouted.
"Imogen," said Maris.
"Maris," the Inquisitor's voice rose, "I've had about enough of you and your delinquent children."
"Imogen," Maris said again. There was something in her voice, an urgency, that made even the Inquisitor turn and look. The air just by the freestanding brass globe was shimmering like water. A shape began to coalesce out of it, like black paint being stroked over white canvas, evolving into the figure of a man with broad, plank-like shoulders. The image was wavering, too much for Alec to see more than that the man was tall, with a shock of close-cropped salt-white hair.
Valentine!
The Inquisitor looked caught off guard, Alec thought, though surely she must have been expecting him. The air by the globe was shimmering more violently now. Isabel gasped as a man stepped out of the wavering air, as if he were coming up through layers of water. Jace's father was a formidable man, over 6 feet tall with a wide chest and hard, thick arms corded with ropey muscles. His face was almost triangular, sharpening to a hard, pointed chin. He might have been considered handsome, Alec thought, but he was startlingly unlike Jace, lacking anything of his son's pale gold looks. The hilt of a sword was visible just over his left shoulder, the mortal sword. It wasn't as if he needed to be armed, since he wasn't corporeally present, so he must have worn it to annoy the Inquisitor. Not that she needed to be more annoyed than she was.
"Imogen," Valentine said, his dark eyes grazing the Inquisitor with a look of satisfied amusement. That's Jace all over, that look, Alec thought. "And Maris. My Maris. It has been a long time."
Maris, swallowing hard, said with some difficulty,
"I'm not your Maris, Valentine." "And these must be your children,"
Valentine went on as if she hadn't spoken. His eyes came to rest on Isabel and Alec. A faint shiver went through Alec, as if something had plucked at his nerves. Jace's father's words were perfectly ordinary, even polite, but there was something in his blank and predatory gaze that made Alec want to step in front of his sister and block her from Valentine's view.
"They look just like you."
"Leave my children out of this, Valentine," Maris said, clearly struggling to keep her voice steady.
"Well, that hardly seems fair," Valentine said. "Considering you haven't left my child out of this."
He turned to the Inquisitor.
"I got your message. Surely that's not the best you can do."
She hadn't moved. Now she blinked slowly, like a lizard.
"I hope the terms of my offer were perfectly clear." "My son in return for the mortal instruments. That was it, correct? Otherwise you'll kill him."
"Kill him?" Isabel echoed. "Mom!"
"Isabel," Maris said tightly, "shut up!"
The Inquisitor shot Isabel and Alec a venomous glare between her slitted eyelids.
"You have the terms correct, Morgenstern." "Then my answer is no."
"No?" The Inquisitor looked as if she'd taken a step forward on solid ground and it had collapsed under her feet.
"You can't bluff me, Valentine. I will do exactly as I threatened." "Oh, I have no doubt in you, Imogen. You have always been a woman of single-minded and ruthless focus. I recognize these qualities in you because I possess them myself." "I am nothing like you. I follow the law. Even when it instructs you to kill a boy still in his teens just to punish his father. This is not about the law, Imogen. It is that you hate and blame me for the death of your son, and this is your manner of recompensing me. It will make no difference. I will not give up the mortal instruments, not even for Jonathan."
The Inquisitor simply stared at him.
"But he's your son," she said.
"Your child."
"Children make their own choices," said Valentine. "That's something you never understood. I offered Jonathan safety if he stayed with me. He spurned it and returned to you. And you'll exact your revenge on him as I told him you would." "You are nothing, Imogen," he finished, "if not predictable."
The Inquisitor didn't seem to notice the insult.
"The Clave will insist on his death should you not give me the mortal instruments," she said, like someone caught in a bad dream.
I won't be able to stop them.
I'm aware of that, said Valentine. But there's nothing I can do. I offered him a chance. He didn't take it.
Bastard! Isabel shouted suddenly and made as if to run forward. Alec grabbed her arm and dragged her backward, holding her there. He's a dickhead, she hissed, then raised her voice, shouting at Valentine. You're a...
Isabel.
Alec covered his sister's mouth with his hand as Valentine spared them both a single, amused glance.
You offered him.
The Inquisitor was starting to remind Alec of a robot whose circuits were shorting out.
And he turned you down?
She shook her head.
But he's your spy, your weapon.
Is that what you thought?
He said, with apparently genuine surprise.
I am hardly interested in spying out the secrets of the Clave. I'm only interested in its destruction. And to achieve that end, I have far more powerful weapons in my arsenal than a boy.
But...
Believe what you like, Valentine said with a shrug. You are nothing, Imogen Herondale. The figurehead of a regime whose power is soon to be shattered, its rule ended. There is nothing you have to offer me that I could possibly want.
Valentine! The Inquisitor threw herself forward, as if she could stop him, catch at him, but her hands only went through him as if through water. With a look of supreme disgust, he stepped back and vanished. The sky was licked with the last tongues of a fading fire. The water had turned to iron. Clary drew her jacket closer around her body and shivered.
Are you cold?
Jace had been standing at the back of the truck bed looking down at the wake the car left behind it, two white lines of foam cutting the water. Now he came and slid down beside her, his back against the rear window of the cab. The window itself was almost entirely fogged up with bluish smoke.
Aren't you?
No. He shook his head and slid his jacket off, handing it across to her. She put it on, reveling in the softness of the leather. It was too big in that comforting way.
You're going to stay in the truck like Luke told you to, right?
Do I have a choice?
Not in the literal sense, no.
She slid her glove off and reached out her hand to him. He took it, gripping it tightly. She looked down at their interlaced fingers, hers so small, squared off at the tips, his long and lean. You'll find Simon for me, she said. I know you will.
Clary.
She could see the water all around them mirrored in his eyes.
He may be, I mean, it may be...
No. Her tone left no room for doubt. He'll be all right. He has to be. Jace exhaled. His irises rippled with dark blue water, like tears, Clary thought. But they weren't tears, only reflections.
There's something I want to ask you, he said. I was afraid to ask before, but now I'm not afraid of anything.
His hand moved to cup her cheek, his palm warm against her cold skin, and she found that her own fear was gone, as if he could pass the power of the fearless rune to her through his touch. Her chin went up, her lips parting in expectation. His mouth brushed hers lightly, so lightly it felt like the brush of a feather. The memory of a kiss. And then he pulled back, his eyes widening. She saw the black wall in them, rising up to blot out the incredulous gold, the shadow of the ship. Jace let go of her with an exclamation and scrambled to his feet. Clary got up awkwardly, Jace's heavy jacket throwing her off balance. Blue sparks were flying from the windows of the cab, and in their light she could see that the side of the ship was corrugated black metal. That there was a thin ladder crawling down one side, and that an iron railing ran around the top. What looked like big, awkwardly shaped birds were perched on the railing. Waves of cold seemed to roll off the boat like freezing air off an iceberg. When Jace called out to her, his breath came out in white puffs, his words lost in the sudden engine roar of the big ship. She frowned at him.
What? What did you say?
He grabbed for her, sliding a hand up under her jacket, his fingertips grazing her bare skin. She yelped in surprise. He yanked the serif blade he'd given her earlier from her belt and pressed it into her hand.
I said, and he let her go, to get Abrariel out, because they're coming.
Who are coming?
The demons.
He pointed up. At first Clary saw nothing. Then she noticed the huge, awkward birds she'd seen before. They were dropping off the railing one by one, falling like stones down the side of the boat, then leveling out and heading straight for the truck where it floated on top of the waves. As they got closer, she saw that they weren't birds at all, but ugly flying things like pterodactyls with wide, leathery wings and bony, triangular heads. Their mouths were full of serrated shark teeth, row on row of them, and their claws glinted like straight razors. Jace scrambled up onto the roof of the cab, Telantes blazing in his hand. As the first of the flying things reached them, he flung the blade. It struck the demon, slicing off the top of its skull the way you might slice the top of an egg. With a high, windy screech, the thing toppled sideways, wings spasming. When it struck the ocean, the water boiled. The second demon hit the hood of the truck, its claws raking long furrows in the metal. It flung itself against the windshield, spiderwebbing the glass. Clary shouted for Luke, but another one of them dive-bombed her, hurtling down from the steel sky like an arrow. She yanked the sleeve of Jace's jacket up, flinging her arm out to show the defensive rune. The demon screeched as the other one had, wings flapping backward, but it had already come too close, within her reach. She saw that it had no eyes, only indentations on each side of its skull, as she smashed a Brariel into its chest. It burst apart, leaving a wisp of black smoke behind. "Well done," said Jace. He had jumped down from the truck cab to dispatch another one of the screeching flying things. He had a dagger out now, its hilt slicked with black blood. "What are these things?" Clary panted, swinging a Brariel in a wide arc that slashed across the chest of a flying demon. It cawed and swiped at her with a wing. This close, she could see that the wings ended in blade-sharp ridges of bone. This one caught the sleeve of Jace's jacket and tore it across. "My jacket!" said Jace in a rage, and stabbed down at the thing as it rose, piercing its back. It shrieked and disappeared. "I loved that jacket." Clary stared at him, then spun around as the rending screech of metal assailed her ears. Two of the flying demons had their claws in the top of the truck cab, ripping it off the frame. The air was filled with the screech of tearing metal. Luke was down on the hood of the truck, slashing at the creatures with his kinjal. One toppled off the side of the truck, vanishing before it hit the water. The other burst into the air, the cab roof clutched in its claws, screeching triumphantly, and winged back toward the boat. For the moment, the sky was clear. Clary raced up and peered down into the cab. Magnus was slumped down in a seat, his face gray. It was too dark for her to see if he was wounded. "Magnus," she shouted, "are you hurt?"
"No."
He struggled to sit upright, then fell back against the seat.
"I'm just drained. The protection spells on the ship are strong. Stripping them, keeping them off is difficult." His voice faded. "But if I don't do it, anyone who sets foot on that ship other than Valentine will die."
"Maybe you should come with us," said Luke.
"I can't work on the wards if I'm on the ship itself. I have to do it from here. That's the way it works."
Magnus's grin looked painful.
"Besides, I'm no good in a fight. My talents lie elsewhere."
Clary, still hanging down into the cab, began, "But what if we need—"
"Clary!"
Luke shouted, but it was too late. None of them had seen the flying creature clinging motionless to the side of the truck. It launched itself upward now, winging sideways, claws sinking deep into the back of Clary's jacket, a blur of shadowy wings and reeking jagged teeth. With a howling screech of triumph, it took off into the air, Clary dangling helplessly from its claws.
"Clary!"
Luke shouted again, and raced to the edge of the truck's hood and stopped there, staring hopelessly upward at the dwindling winged shape with its slackly hanging burden.
"It won't kill her," said Jace, joining him on the hood. "It's retrieving her for Valentine."
There was something about his tone that sent a chill through Luke's blood. He turned to stare at the boy next to him.
"But—"
He didn't finish. Jace had already dived from the truck in a single smooth movement. He splashed down in the filthy river water and struck out toward the boat, his strong kicks churning the water to froth. Luke turned back to Magnus, whose pale face was just visible through the cracked windshield, a white smudge against the darkness. Luke held a hand up, thought he saw Magnus nod in response. Sheathing his kinjal at his side, he dived into the river after Jace. Alec released his hold on Isabel, half expecting her to start screaming the moment he took his hand off her mouth. She didn't. She stood beside him and stared as the Inquisitor stood, swaying slightly, her face a chalky gray-white. "Imogen," Mayra said. There was no feeling in her voice, not even any anger. The Inquisitor didn't seem to hear her. Her expression didn't change as she sank bonelessly into Hodge's old chair. "My God," she said, staring down at the desk. "What have I done?" Mayris glanced over at Isabel. "Get your father." Isabel, looking as frightened as Alec had ever seen her, nodded and slipped out of the room. Mayris crossed the room to the Inquisitor and looked down at her. "What have you done, Imogen?" she said. "You've handed victory to Valentine. That's what you've done."
"No,"
the Inquisitor breathed. "You knew exactly what Valentine was planning when you locked Jace up. You refused to allow the Clave to become involved because it would have interfered with your plan. You wanted to make Valentine suffer as he has made you suffer, to show him you had the power to kill his son the way he killed yours. You wanted to humble him."
"Yes."
"But Valentine will not be humbled," said Mayris. "I could have told you that. You never had a hold over him. He only pretended to consider your offer to make absolutely certain that we would have no time to call for reinforcements from Idris. And now it's too late." The Inquisitor looked up wildly. Her hair had come loose from its knot and hung in lank strips around her face. It was the most human Alec had seen her look, but he got no pleasure out of it. His mother's words chilled him. "Too late."
"No, Mayris," she said. "We can still..."
"Still what?" Mayris's voice cracked. "Call on the Clave? We don't have the days, the hours, it would take them to get here. If we're going to face Valentine, and God knows we have no choice..."
"We're going to have to do it now," interrupted a deep voice.
Behind Alec, glowering darkly, was Robert Lightwood. Alec stared at his father. It had been years since he'd seen him in hunting gear. His time had been taken up with administrative tasks, with running the conclave and dealing with downworlder issues. Something about seeing his father in his heavy, dark-armored clothes, his broad sword strapped across his back, reminded Alec of being a child again, when his father had been the biggest, strongest, and most terrifying man he could imagine, and he was still terrifying. He hadn't seen his father since he'd embarrassed himself at Luke's. He tried to catch his eye now, but Robert was looking at Mayris.
"The conclave stands ready," Robert said. "The boats are waiting at the dock."
The Inquisitor's hands fluttered around her face.
"It's no good," she said. "There aren't enough of us. We can't possibly..."
Robert ignored her. Instead, he looked at Mayris.
"We should go very soon," he said,
and in his tone there was the respect that had been lacking when he had addressed the Inquisitor.
"But the Clave," the Inquisitor began. "They should be informed."
Mayris shoved the phone on the desk toward the Inquisitor hard.
"You tell them. Tell them what you've done. It's your job, after all."
The Inquisitor said nothing, just stared at the phone, one hand over her mouth. Before Alec could start to feel sorry for her, the door opened again and Isabel came in her shadow hunter gear, with her long silver-gold whip in one hand and a wooden-bladed naginata in the other. She frowned at her brother.
"Go get ready," she said. "We're sailing for Valentine's ship right away."
Alec couldn't help it. The corner of his mouth twitched upward. Isabel was always so determined.
"Is that for me?" he asked, indicating the naginata.
Isabel jerked it away from him. "Get your own."
Some things never change.
Alec headed toward the door, but was stopped by a hand on his shoulder. He looked up in surprise. It was his father. He was looking down at Alec, and though he wasn't smiling, there was a look of pride on his lined and tired face.
"If you're in need of a blade, Alexander, my geese arm is in the entryway if you'd like to use it."
Alec swallowed and nodded, but before he could thank his father, Isabel spoke from behind him.
"Here you go, Mom," she said.
Alec turned and saw his sister in the process of handing the naginata to his mother, who took it and spun it expertly in her grasp.
"Thank you, Isabel,"
Mayra said, and with a movement as swift as any of her daughters, she lowered the blade so that it pointed